Mr. Keeler, Reel 5. Now, you went back to Chatham. What happened when you got to Chatham and then the survivors
left? When we got to Chatham, we got to Chatham Station, we were lorried then to Chatham Barracks. So then you know you're back in the Navy. Because although you're feeling sorry for yourself, you've still got oil about you, you hadn't got a proper uniform, you only got bits and pieces which we were given in Scotland. And we got back to Chatham in the middle of the night. We had to sleep on the floor in the gymnasium, which is typical, of barrack life, So we went back to Chatham. And the next day we were medically examined, we were also given new kits, and then we were all sent on 16-day survivor's leave. I think a couple of the chaps had to go to an inquiry about what had happened. Some of the more senior people I did, but I didn't go myself. I went on survivor's leave down to Ashford in Kent. And on board the Worm, there was a petty officer now, and an awfully nice man, a townie of mine, because I came from Ashford. And I made it my business to go and find his wife and a family, because I knew he had a wife and baby. And I went to... I spent a very sad, unhappy survivor's leave. I hadn't got any friends there in Ashford. All my friends had obviously gone off and so on, and I'd spent very little time doing anything much, really. I was in a very depressed state.
Were you having a reaction, nightmares?
A definite reaction. And I lived with my mum and dad at King's North in the house they lived in. My sister was away in the ATS, and I spent 16 days survivor's leave in a very sad state, I'm afraid. But I did, one thing I did do, which I wanted to do, was find Petty Officer Lowen's wife. Which I did, and they lived in this bungalow in Beaver Lane. Then I went to the door, knocked on the door, rang the bell, whatever I did, I can't remember now. And she came to the door with their baby in her arms, where you can imagine the tears on both sides. And she asked me in, and her mother and father were there, fortunately. And we had a chat about what had happened, and I made her tell me that there was no hope for him. We were able to talk about the loss of Bullen, and I had to sadly tell her that although they had a telegram to say he was missing, I was able to tell them very sadly that there was no hope for him, which I knew at the time. And I spent a very sad 16 days survivor's leave, as I said, and but that's one thing I wanted to do while I was on survivor's leave, which I did, fortunately, and I felt better for it. And since then I've met them. Latterly, in the last 2 years, I found Peg Officer Lowen's wife, the daughter who has now grown up as schoolmistress at Marden in Kent, and we've had a little reunion together, and she distressed to me repeatedly that she was so grateful I went to see her that day, and I explained to her what she thought I was very brave, a young 18-year-old, to go along and tell her what had happened to her husband. Anyway, that was the end of that story, really, but we have made friends again since. Not that we were any bad friends, but we have got together and had a little reunion talking about what happened that day. Now, after Chatham, we were back in Chatham after my survivor's leave. I was given a draft, a naval party draft to Germany. It was something completely different. It meant not going back to sea again, which I was quite pleased with.
Now, what was a naval party draft?
Naval party, I really can't remember the number of it, Peter. We had a number. Naval party, 1751, there you are. That's the number. Come back to me. 1751. And we were issued with army uniform, khaki, Royal Navy on our shoulders, sailor's hats, boots, like gaiters, like army. And we were then met up with some Marines who were going to be the lorry drivers. There was four lorries full up with equipment, and we had marine drivers with us, and also we had torpedo ratings with us and mine clearance ratings with us. Now, there was at least four men off the Bullen, which was nice, because we were able to talk about what had happened in the past.
Now, when was this? When was this?
This was in 1945.
Do you know what month?
I had end of January 1945. The war was still on, obviously. We shipped across on a landing craft from Dover, or where, I can't remember where we went from, but we landed in France, Ostend, if I remember right. And then we drove in convoy to Bremen in Germany, seeing obviously all the destruction along the way and still fighting going on. Not that we went through the fighting lines, but it was obviously still very much the war was still on. And in Bremen, it was our job then to clear the mines from the docks. Now, when I say clear the mines from the docks, there was parachute mines, there was mines the Germans had planted. In the docks, it was the most unbelievable sight because there were ships sunk everywhere from the bombing. And just the usual debris of wartime bombing. And we spent a number...
How did you go about clearing the mines?
I mean, well, you had to put a cable out in the dock around the ship. It was the ship sunk. We would put a cable round, and then we drop what they call a hammer into the bottom of the dock, and that sends out a pulsating movement, and that explodes the mines. If there's mines there, we had to do it every inch of the dockyard in Bremen because, in case there were mines there or bombs there or whatever, or the Germans might have planted. And we were billeted. An SS family I remember very well were turned out of their house in Hartwigstrasse in Bremen, and we were billeted in their house. We took over their house as they moved out. Officers that we had, two officers with us, two officers, petty officers, and seamen and marines, and we moved into this house. And every day we'd go down to the dock to sort out the dockyard area. I can't remember offhand how long we stayed there, but from there we went to Hamburg. And in Hamburg docks we did exactly the same as what we did in Bremen. We were meant to clear the mines or any explosive objects from the dockyard area. I must confess, during the day, when we were used to set up our minesweeping gear, we were given 2 hours, you know, where we could roam. So that was the time to going off investigating, you know. Looting, shall we say? Could we call it looting? Anything we could find to pick up, souvenir, you know, souvenir of the war, you know.
What sort of things did you get?
Well, Hamburg, of course, there was a very famous shipping line from Hamburg called the Hamburg America Line. And we found their stores, and I brought home, no longer got it now, I'm afraid, at least I don't think I have, cutlery, china, all sorts of things, souvenirs from the Hamburg America line, which we brought home.
Anything of real value, or was it...
No, it was little things like that, nothing of real value at all, nothing of real value at all. And Marley, we all did it, I mean, and fortunately we were all coming home in these lorries when we'd finished our job, so we were able at the end to load all this stuff on our lorries and bring it home with us. But while I was in Hamburg, I caught something very stupid called German measles. Of all things to catch in Germany, I caught German measles. And I was sent from Hamburg on a train with a lot of displaced persons right across Germany to Louvain in Belgium, where I remained in a military hospital there, which was a nunnery that had been taken over by the army. And I spent my time in Louvain, and that is where the war finished. I was in Louvain in the hospital when the war finished, and I can remember distinctly to this day the cheering and shouting, the singing and dancing in the street outside, which I couldn't join in, obviously, but it was nice to know that the war was over.
How did you feel?
How did I feel? We didn't know what it was. They said I wasn't well. We thought maybe it was that I'd seen an army doctor in Hamburg, and they knew the situation, what I was a survivor. They didn't know what was wrong with me, but when I got to the hospital in Belgium, in Louvain, German measles came out, the spots came out. And that's how we knew that I caught German measles, or had German measles. Whether it was that, or whether it was something from the torpedo, no, I don't know, but I wasn't a very well man. And I spent, as near as I can remember, at least 6 weeks in this hospital in Belgium.
Now, before when you were in Hamburg, how did you get on with the German civilians? Or
Now, in Bremen, let's go back to Bremen in a minute. We were living in a street, a very select street, obviously, where rich people had lived in Bremen, and we got on well with the local people. A little girl I could show you a photograph of called Zibilla, bless her heart, I'd like to see her now. And we used to play with the children. They came and we gave them chocolates and things like that, which we had and they didn't. And people used to come round, you know, looking at us in amazement, I suppose, to think that we were the conquerors, you know. But we got on well with the local people.
No resentment that you could judge?
No resentment that we could tell of at all. No resentment at all.
And what about the black market? Were you aware of that at all?
No, I wasn't aware of the black market. I wasn't aware at all of the black market at all. No. But people did come in and we used to give them things like sugar, tea, coffee, anything like that. Anything they asked for, if we got it, cigarettes for men, obviously, and women as well. They used to come in on the edge, as we used to say, you know. But we were the conquerors. We didn't feel that way, I don't think, entirely. You know, but we wanted to make peace, wanted to be friends, you know, and this is what we said about doing. But there was no resentment at all. But I must say, just before the end of the war, I did see a lot of Nazis walking about with their bands on and they're saluting each other and all this. You know? So you knew you were really thrown in at the end of the war when you saw all this, they were still in fighting trim, so to speak, you know. They were the important people.
Now what happened next? So you were at Louvain.
I was in Louvain in Belgium, which was a nunnery, as I said, and I was there. And I was in the isolation ward with a British soldier. It was a moaning devil, typical British soldier, moan, Monty this and Monty that, and I did this and I did that. But I had to spend this convalescent time in this hospital in Louvain in Belgium. And after that, when I was discharged, and oh, by the way, there were Belgian nuns looking after us. We couldn't speak Flemish, and they couldn't speak English. But we understood each other, and we got on well together. The nuns were absolutely marvellous. No doubt they'd been nursing Germans a few months before, but we got on very well. It was an unhappy time, apart from not being too good. Anyway, after that, I was discharged from there, and I had to get on another train and go all the way back to Hamburg. Again, it was up to me to get to a station, find a train heading for Hamburg, and you must bear in mind that the place was in a terrible mess, bombing and everything, you know, displaced persons everywhere, disheveled German soldiers trying to get home, people just wandering around trying to get back to where they came from, you know. And I finally arrived back in Hamburg in the dockyard of Hamburg, back in my billet where we were.
And what was the situation like in Hamburg?
We weren't in civilian premises in Hamburg. We were in the docks itself, in buildings which we took over. They were office blocks or whatever they were, but we were in these office blocks. And that's where we stayed while we were in Hamburg, doing the same work as we did in Bremen, which was clearing the mines from the docks.
Now, did you find many mines? You know, that when you set off the current...
No, we didn't. There were several suspected mines which exploded. But nothing specific at all. But it was a job that had to be done because, as I said, there were ships sunk there, there was submarine U-boats sunk there in the dockyard area, and we had to do everything. When you came to a ship that was sunk, you had to lift your pulsing gear over the funnel, over the bridge, over the mast, and put it all around the ship, and then set your equipment up to explode the mines. And it had to be done in case there were mines there. It was a question of clear, like they clear mines on land, we had to clear mines in the water. And I stayed there then until probably 3 months after the end of the war, and then I was...
Were there other naval personnel? I mean, there was your dockyard, your party, was there any other?
We were the only naval personnel there, in the whole of Hamburg dockyard. So I saw Hamburg dockyard as it was immediately after the war, you know, at the end of the war. And the city of Hamburg was absolutely bombed flat. We used to drive every day, you know, in our lorries, you know, to different parts to get to the different docks. And we could see the destruction in Hamburg, you know. And that is where I really finished my naval career there, because then, after that, we loaded on our lorries and went back to Chatham Barracks.
And when was that? I mean...
That was in 1946.
You were out there for...
We were there for quite a while. And I was finally discharged from the Navy in 1946.
What do you remember of the demobilisation procedure?
Well, I wasn't sorry to get out of the Navy, I must confess. I wasn't a full-time sailor, obviously. I was what they call an HO, hostilities only, and I was welcome going home. Although, what was I going home to? I didn't know. I wasn't feeling terribly fit at the time, I remember that distinctly, and I went home very apprehensive of what I was going on.
Do you know what month you finished in 46? Roughly?
August, I think it was, August, as far as I remember.
Now, what were you to do? I mean, you know, as you say, you were apprehensive. What did you do?
Well, I mean, before I went in the Navy, I'd done various jobs in the British Royal King's North and Ashley in Kent. And one of my jobs, I worked on a farm. I drove a lorry, and I got a lorry driver's license at that time as well. Although I was only just 15 when I got the lorry driver's license. So what did I do when I went home? In Ashford itself, there were very large railway works. So being an ex-serviceman, I went along there and applied for a job in the railway works. But I hated it. I was put on a machine or sweeping up shavings and whatever. I hated being shut in this railway works. It was a terrible thing to me, having had my freedom. And then one day, I married them for the first time, and one day we had a local taxi, to take us home from the station. We'd been to the seaside for the day, and the taxi driver was an ex-serviceman, I'm not sure, RAF, he was RAF. And he said, we were discussing in the car going along what I was doing, you know, and I was unhappy being home, not knowing what I was doing, couldn't get settled in the job. He said, if I ever, don't you come to us so that you can drive, come to us and join us. It was an ex-service set up, run by an ex-wing commander called Mr. Roberts, and he had this taxi service called the RAF, RAFF Taxi, RAF Taxi. And I started to work as a driver. I did 4.5 years there on the taxis until I was then got out a lot of private work. Do you want to know all this?
Yes, yeah.
I was seconded to a local lord, Lord Killearn, who I used to drive to London and stay in London with him and take them back again at weekends to Chilham Castle, where they lived. And I did various jobs like that for more VIP people, I suppose. And I was happy doing that, and that day really I came to get into my life of chauffeuring, which I've done ever since. I've done everything.
Now, what about the effects of the war? What physical... You'd had a terrible experience in the middle of it.
I was young, Peter. I was young, and I was regaining my fitness. I was then, at that point, trying to put the war out of my mind. I didn't want to think about the war, and I wanted to... Although I was with other ex-servicemen, no ex-Navy men, we were quite a happy group because there were about 8 of us all together, all ex-service, some Army, some Navy. Me, I was in the Navy, and the others were RAF. And we were a happy crowd of people, and we were all home after the war.
Was there any... So physically you were recovering, but what about any mental after-effects?
Well, that's another problem, isn't it? Mental problems, because I used to have nightmares over this awful business being in the water. And seeing my shipmates dying, you know, that was an awful time, but as far as that was concerned. But I did try and put it out of my mind, and I did for a number of years, get it out of my mind. And the nightmares finished, I'd married for the first time, and I settled down into civilian.
You had no professional help with the nightmares or anything like that?
None at all.
You were just left to it?
Left to it, yeah. Absolutely.
But gradually, how long would you say before it wore off?
Probably a couple of years, rough guess, but probably a couple of years.
Now, you've taken an interest in the Bullen more recently. Could you tell me a bit? We're quite interested in these associations. How did you come to join the? It's the HMS Bullen Survivors Association.
The whole time I was working, obviously, I used to spend a lot of time in London. That's when my first marriage broke up, and I met my present wife. And we married in 1986. And when I got a bit older, I thought, wouldn't it be nice to get in touch with people off at the old ship, HMS Bullen, which was really my main ship in the Navy. We were very close, all of us, because we were talking about, and we got a story to tell. I wanted to get in touch with these people. And so I asked Charlie Chester, who used to have a radio program every Sunday night on the BBC radio, sending out requests for ex-service people. And I asked Charlie to put in a request for me, Stephen Keeler, for Tessie O'Shea, who was a very popular wartime singer and comedian, Maggie Left, to sing I'm Dreaming Tonight in My Blue Eyes was the song, but she used to sing Black Eyes. And I knew that anybody around off the Bullen who was still around would hear it and know it and hear it and realise it was one of their old songs. And sure enough, a chap named Jack Maynell, who lived in Bradford, heard it, fortunately. And next, a few doors away from him, was another chap off the Bullen called Tom Johnson, both good friends of mine on board the Bullen. And then Jack Maynell wrote to me. He rang me up, I beg your pardon, he rang me up. What was the name? Charlie Chester. They don't give your name and address to the people who wrote. He wrote to Jack Maynell and told him that I was interested in getting in touch with, and Charlie Chester put us together. So Jack Maynell rang me up and I got on the next plane from the London airport with my family and we flew to Bradford. I couldn't get there quick enough. So we went up there and spent a nice long, long, long weekend with them, refreshing our mind at all times. And within a few months, I'd found another chap. We were talking about where these people came from off the ship, you know, and somebody said they came from Birmingham, so I advertised in the local Birmingham paper. Then I discovered the Navy News, which is a magazine that's still around, goes out to all its service Navy people. And I started advertising in the Navy News, and gradually I got up to 33 of us altogether, I found altogether. And we started having our reunions in Gorston-on-Sea. I'm going to correct myself there. It wasn't 1986 I got married, it was 1968 I got married for the second time. 1968, I'm getting muddled. In 1986, we had our first reunion of all of us, a lot of us, in Gorston-on-Sea. Why Gorston-on-Sea? Because one of the chaps lives in Great Yarmouth, and he was an ex-provincial man who knew everybody, knew all the local hotel people. And I asked him, look, Charlie, can't you find a local hotel who you know who would have a naval reunion for us? And that's what he did. So we started having our naval reunions in Gorston-on-Sea.
What were they like, the reunions?
Absolutely wonderful. Wives came, families came, my wife came, my children came. It was the most wonderful, wonderful time to get together with your old shipmates. And because of this, other ships heard about us, like in the Navy News, like people off the Goodall. So people off the Goodall used to join us as well. So we reunited that side of it as well. Also, one of the chaps off the Hesperus, who was one of the key figures on rescuing us in the water. He's the chap who was throwing heaving lines for our captain in the water. And our captain, having had orders from his bridge, save the captain, save the captain. He was throwing heaving lines to the men in the water. And the captain, bless his heart, was taking the heaving lines and giving them to other men in the water. And Tom Huckabee, Tom Dudridge, who still lives down in Cornwall, I'm still in touch with, we write letters every other week to each other. Tom Dudridge came to the reunion and we were able to talk then about the ship being sunk, and he told us his side of the story. And other men from the Goodall also told us their side of the story as well. So when we came to putting this book of survivors together, and the memories of the sinking, several people chipped in, people off the Goodall.
This is the book we've got a copy of in the museum, The Life and Death of H.M.S. Bullen, Memories of Some Survivors.
Men off the Hesperus, off the Goodall, off the Lockins, all gave their stories and what they remember about that day.
And that's in the War Museum now.
That's all in the records in the War Museum now, yes. Now, Charlie died, bless his heart, this chap who organised reunions in Gorston-on-Sea. Although I used to help him with it, obviously, because being one of the instigators of it all getting together. And then we moved over on the west coast then to Southport, because there were people on the west coast couldn't travel to the east coast. Everybody's going to get old, you know. We not only had men, we had widows. One widow in particular, Ada Ashworth, whose husband was the sick bay attendant on Bullen, and he, for us, was one of our heroes as well, because what did he do when the ship was sunk, when the ship was hit? He took his sick bag and he went down the boiler house to help men who were trapped down there who were screaming. from steam, burn, steam, burn. He went down the boiler house and he never survived. But Ada Ashworth, I found her as well, and I found the daughter as well, that she was pregnant with, obviously, at the time, who never saw her husband, never knew what happened to her husband. So I'd been able to tell her the story of what had happened. You know?
Now, you didn't, I want to make it clear, you didn't actually see the captain throwing the lines.
The last time I saw the captain was when he leaned over the bridge and said, abandon ship, lads, and good luck.
But these are reports you had since. You've pieced together the story from...
Other men who were trying to save us that day.
Now, it's obviously been very important to you. Why did you decide to... You suspended it. Was it last year, in 2000?
It got like that, the year before last it was. I think we met all together about 8 years running, and then we suspended it because, again, that was my idea, because I was like that. I was writing to people, and people couldn't write back. They couldn't, you know, for their health or whatever. People were dying, and men were passing on. They got like that, and they couldn't all attend the reunions.
So it stopped in 1999, you think?
1998. I'd have to look that up to be certain of it, but I could tell you the exact date exactly. I can show you pictures of all our reunions of all of us getting. We had 8 reunions altogether from the time we started. Sometimes extra men came in. Men who we hadn't seen before. Sadly, several of them died, so we never saw them again, obviously. And also, as I said, men whose families of men who'd lost relations on the Bullen, they started coming as well. So it made one big happy family of survivors' relatives. And of course, with the relatives, they were able to learn from men off the Bullen exactly what had happened that day. In some cases, they didn't know they had received the telegrams, you know, to say their so-and-so was missing, presumed, killed. So we were able to tell them what had happened that day, you know. And if I can come up to date a little more now, it's a very quick story, which has happened not very long ago, last year. I went to Preston to see one of our wives, who was 92. It was one of the men who lost their lives on the Bullen's wives. 92. I went on the train to Preston to go and visit her for her birthday party. And I sat beside a lady on the train, and we got talking. She said, where are you going to? And I said, well, I'm going to Preston for a 92-year-old birthday party. It was one of my old shipmates' wives who didn't survive the sinking. Oh, she said, my brother. Lost his life on a ship. So I said, oh, did she? What was the name of the ship? So she said, I don't know, but I'll find out from my mother. Sure enough, she took my phone number, and within days she rang in to say it was HMS Boone. So we found another family who didn't know what had happened that day on December 1944. And all her mother knew was her son and this lady's brother was missing for the interview. I was able to give them a full report. These are little stories that have come up, you know, with finding survivors, surviving relatives of surviving. And it's been a wonderful help to everybody who's been connected with it to help them to get over the time of being torpedoed on HMS Bullen, and also satisfying their relatives as to what happened to their next of kin.
Thank you very much. Okay.